Chapter 116. Proceedings of the French at Tahiti. As I happened to arrive at the island at a very interesting period in its political affairs, it may be well to give some little account here of the proceedings of the French, by way of episode to the narrative. My information was obtained at the time from the general reports then rife among the natives, as well as from what I learned upon a subsequent visit, and reliable accounts which I have seen since reaching home. It seems that for some time back the French had been making repeated ineffectual attempts to plant a Roman Catholic mission here. But, invariably treated with contumely, they sometimes met with open violence, and, in every case, those directly concerned in the enterprise were ultimately forced to depart. In one instance, two priests, Laval and Cassett, after enduring a series of persecutions, were set upon by the natives, maltreated, and finally carried aboard a small trading schooner, which eventually put them ashore at Wallace's Island, a savage place some 2,000 miles to the westward. Now, that the resident English missionaries authorized the banishment of these priests is a fact undenied by themselves. I was also repeatedly informed that by their inflammatory harangues they instigated the riots which preceded the sailing of the schooner. At all events, it is certain that their unbounded influence with the natives would easily have enabled them to prevent everything that took place on this occasion, had they felt so inclined. Melancholy as such an example of intolerance on the part of Protestant missionaries must appear, it is not the only one, and by no means the most flagrant, which might be presented. But I forbear to mention any others, since they have been more than hinted at by recent voyagers, and their repetition here would perhaps be attended with no good effect. Besides, the conduct of the Sandwich Island missionaries in particular has latterly much amended in this respect. The treatment of the two priests form the principal ground and the only justifiable one upon which two petted sours demanded satisfaction, and which subsequently led to his seizure of the island. In addition to other things, he also charged that the flag of Marinaut, the consul, had been repeatedly insulted, and the property of a certain French resident violently appropriated by the government. In the latter instance, the natives were perfectly in the right. At that time, the law against the traffic in ardent spirits every now and then suspended and revived happened to be in force. And finding a large quantity on the premises of Victor, a low, knavish adventurer from Marseille, the Tahitians pronounced it forfeit. For these, and similar alleged outrages, a large pecuniary restitution was demanded, $10,000, which there being no exchequer to supply, the island was forthwith seized, under cover of a mock treaty, dictated to the chiefs on the gun deck of Du Petit Thouars' frigate. But, notwithstanding this formality, there seems now little doubt that the downfall of the Pommerees was decided upon at the Tuileries. After establishing the protectorate, so-called, the rear admiral sailed, leaving M. Bruet governor, assisted by Rhein and Carpen, civilians, named members of the Council of Government, and Marinaut, the consul, now made commissioner royal. No soldiers, however, were landed until several months afterward. As men, Rhein and Carpen were not disliked by the natives, but Bruet and Marinaut they bitterly detested. In several interviews with the poor queen, the unfeeling governor sought to terrify her into compliance with his demands, clapping his hand upon his sword, shaking his fist in her face, and swearing violently. Oh, King of a great nation, said Pommerie, in her letter to Louis-Philippe, fetch away this man. I and my people cannot endure his evil doings. He is a shameless man. Although the excitement among the natives did not wholly subside upon the rear admiral's departure, no overt act of violence immediately followed. The queen had fled to Imio, and the dissensions among the chiefs, together with the ill-advised conduct of the missionaries, prevented a union upon some common plan of resistance. But the great body of the people, as well as their queen, confidently relied upon the speedy interposition of England, a nation bound to them by many ties, and which, more than once, had solemnly guaranteed their independence. As for the missionaries, they openly defied the French governor, childishly predicting fleets and armies from Britain. But what is the welfare of a spot like Tahiti to the mighty interests of France and England? There was a remonstrance on one side, and a reply on the other, and there the matter rested. For once in their brawling lives, St. George and St. Denis were hand and glove, and they were not going to cross sabers about Tahiti. During my stay upon the island, so far as I could see, there was little to denote that any change had taken place in the government. Such laws as they had were administered the same as ever. The missionaries went about unmolested, and comparative tranquility everywhere prevailed. Nevertheless, I sometimes heard the natives inveighing against the French,
no favorites, by the by, throughout Polynesia,
and bitterly regretting that the Queen had not, at the outset, made a stand. In the house of the chief Adia, frequent discussions took place concerning the ability of the island to cope with the French. The number of fighting men and muskets among the natives were talked of, as well as the propriety of fortifying several heights overlooking Papeete. Imputing these symptoms to the mere resentment of a recent outrage, and not to any determined spirit of resistance, I little anticipated the gallant, though useless warfare, so soon to follow my departure. At a period subsequent to my first visit, the island, which before was divided into 19 districts, with a native chief over each, in capacity of governor and judge, was, by Bruet, divided into 4. Over these he set as many recreant chiefs, Katoti, Tati, Utami, and Paraita, to whom he paid $1,000 each, to secure their assistance in carrying out his evil designs. The first bloodshed, in an irregular conflict, was at Mahaner, upon the peninsula of Terebu. The fight originated in the seizure of a number of women from the shore by men belonging to one of the French vessels of war. In this affair, the islanders fought desperately, killing about 50 of the enemy, and losing 90 of their own number. The French sailors and marines, who, at the time, were reported to be infuriated with liquor, gave no quarter, and the survivors only saved themselves by fleeing to the mountains. Subsequently, the battles of Hararpurpai and Ferrer were fought, in which the invaders met with indifferent success. Shortly after the engagement at Hararpurpai, 3 Frenchmen were waylaid in a pass of the valleys, and murdered by the incensed natives. One was Lefevre, a notorious scoundrel, and a spy, whom Bruet had sent to conduct a certain Major Fergus,
said to be a Pole,
to the hiding place of 4 chiefs, whom the governor wished to seize and execute. This circumstance violently inflamed the hostility of both parties. About this time, Katoti, a depraved chief, and the pliant tool of Bruet, was induced by him to give a great feast in the Vale of Paris, to which all his countrymen were invited. The governor's object was to gain over all he could to his interests. He supplied an abundance of wine and brandy, and a scene of bestial intoxication was the natural consequence. Before it came to this, however, several speeches were made by the islanders. One of these, delivered by an aged warrior, who had formerly been at the head of the celebrated Erie Society, was characteristic. "Tea, this is a very good feast," said the reeling old man, "and the wine also is very good. But you evil-minded wee-wees French, and you false-hearted men of Tahiti, are all very bad." By the latest accounts, most of the islanders still refused to submit to the French, and what turn events may hereafter take, it is hard to predict. At any rate, these disorders must accelerate the final extinction of their race. Along with the few officers left by Du Petit Thouars, were several French priests, for whose unobstructed exertions in the dissemination of their faith, the strongest guarantees were provided by an article of the treaty. But no one was bound to offer them facilities, much less a luncheon, The first day they went ashore. True, they had plenty of gold, but to the natives it was anathema taboo and, for several hours and some odd minutes, they would not touch it. Emissaries of the Pope and the devil, as the strangers were considered, the smell of sulfur hardly yet shaken out of their canonicals, what islander would venture to jeopardize his soul, and call down a blight on his breadfruit, by holding any intercourse with them? That morning the priests actually picnicked in grove of cocoa nut trees, but, before night, Christian hospitality in exchange for a commercial equivalent of hard dollars was given them in an adjoining house. Wanting in civility, as the conduct of the English missionaries may be thought, in withholding a decent reception to these persons, the latter were certainly to blame in needlessly placing themselves in so unpleasant a predicament. Under far better auspices, they might have settled upon some one of the thousand unconverted isles of the Pacific, rather than have forced themselves thus upon a people already professedly Christians. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.